heart may be heavy with sorrow and care. You may mother to gladness beguile. Keep a face like the light of the morning you wear, and carry your cross with a smile. Carry your cross with a smile. Carry your cross with a smile. You may offer from sadness to gladness beguile, if you carry your cross with a smile. Just smile a while, and while you smile, another smile. And soon there are miles and miles of smiles, and life's worthwhile if you but smile.
Thank you. Of course, my talk is on the subject of Homer Rodehaver, who lived from 1880 to 1955. And before I get going, I want to make a few acknowledgments to people who helped me in this 5-year-long project. First and foremost, Dr. Steve Grill and Carol Forbes at the Reniker Museum of Winona Lake History in Winona Lake, Indiana, which preserves Homer Rodehaver's original office with its furniture and a large number of discs and other ephemera. Bill Furstenberger of the Billy Sunday Museum, which also has the collection of records that belong to Billy and Ma Sunday that Homer made. Collector Mike Montgomery of the Detroit of Southfield, Michigan, who has the largest private collection of 1920s rainbows I've ever seen. Kevin Mungens of the Gospel Music Archive of Ames, Iowa at the University of Iowa, who is working with me on trying to preserve films of Homer Rodehaver. The archives of the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton. My friend Keith Larson, my wife Allison Lewis, who tolerated this project from beginning to end and helped me as it was plagued with problems. And I have a dead computer at home to prove it. Also other things that I referenced for this program, the LOC's American Memory Site, and the wonderful Chautauqua site, Redpath Chautauqua site that's on the University of Iowa and LOC, and the special collections, the Cylinder collection from UCSB. Thanks, Dave, who also unwillingly or unknowingly supplied a selection that we're using today. All right, so to proceed, there seems to be a little confusion about who Homer Rodehaver was, especially as I note on the web there is a autograph site that is selling the autographs of the great jazz trombonist Homer Rodehaver. So it might be a good idea to review a little bit of who he was. He was the most powerful publisher of gospel music in this country between 1915 and 1950. He was the owner of the Rodehaver Hill Mack Publishing Concern, which was a gigantic publisher of gospel music, and was himself the author of about 20 books on various topics. His particular brand of gospel songs were written in the American vernacular of reasonably modern times, to his time, as opposed to the 19th century conceit towards rather high-flown poetry and verses that were rewritten from things that you find in the Bible. These songs deal to some extent with homespun kind of local and even rural terminology for things. And I missed the slide, but this was his first big publications, Rodehaver's Gospel Songs, which appeared in 1910 and sold millions of copies. Next audio, please. This is an example of the sort of thing we're discussing. Okay, well, in a rather fragmented way, that was a representation of a song called The Royal Telephone, which was a popular hymn. Children still sing it in some places, about calling Jesus on the phone by way of prayer. There was another Rhoda Haber publication of a song called Life's Railway to Heaven, which has the simile of life is like a mountain railroad, and you're traveling towards heaven on the train to Jesus. These were the things that Homer specialized in. He was also the founder of the Rainbow Record Company, which was the very first label that I know of that dealt with sacred music exclusively, and also was one of the very first independent record labels in the United States. Some of the people he worked with included this fella, whose name is Alfred Ackley, his brother, Bentley Ackley, and between the two of them, they wrote more than 3,000 hymns. George Barnard, I think is how you say the name, was the author of The Old Rugged Cross, which was a hugely profitable and famous Rhoda Haver copyright. This is Charles H. Gabriel, who not only wrote for Rhoda Haver, but also published other hymn companies as well. But he was very close to Rhoda. Now we need to take a second to clarify some terminology of our time versus their time. Fundamentalism today is something that we almost automatically kind of associate with Jerry Falwell. And evangelistics
evangelicals,
thank you, Mike. Viewed these days as being, well, actually I'm ahead of myself here. In Rhoda Haver's time, fundamentalism was something specific. It belonged to a specific set of evangelism that was nurtured under the leadership of a fellow named J. Wilbur Chapman. It was essentially conservative in its ideology, and they believed that mission work was best done at home within the country. Evangelicals, however, were people who were devoted very strongly to international types of missions and taking the word of the gospel to other lands. These days, when we think of an evangelical, we think of a mega church. And we think of fundamentalism, well, as one minister put it, an evangelical is just a fundamentalist who doesn't want to be called a fundamentalist because of Jerry Falwell. The founder of evangelism in the modern sense was a fellow named Dwight L. Moody, who, with his singing leader, Ira D. Sankey, began a huge movement of evangelism in America in the mid-1870s. And I'm not getting this to work quite the way that I want it to, but it's okay. There we go. Come on, Ira. Move on. Okay.
Yeah. What about it seems to be skipping the animation?
Oh, there it is. See? I knew it was a better presentation than that. Also, another bit of terminology we will address is the different types of gospel. Today, in the scholarly community, there is white gospel and black gospel. In the popular sense, black gospel is gospel, and white gospel is like praise music. And however, in Homer Rodehaver's time, the terminology was different. White gospel was gospel, and black gospel was Southern gospel. And I'm hoping that I will be able to use those terms consistently. This is a picture of Dwight L. Moody leading one of the early evangelistic meetings for which he gained fame in the 1870s. Moody actually did make some records, although he died in 1899. And I think, Patrick Reese, was it you who told me that there's a CD now of recordings of Sankey taking from Leeds and Caitlin cylinders? Music, please. In 1898, Homer Rodehaver enlisted in the Spanish-American War. And this is borrowed from the LOC site. Seen fellows marching along here. It was a nice illustration, but whatever. Anyway, Homer claimed that... Oh, stop, please. Homer claimed that he played the trombone in the military band that was attached to the Rough Riders Regiment of Teddy Roosevelt and actually played at the charge of San Juan Hill. However, his brother, who was enlisted in the same regiment as he, said that Homer was a bass drummer in the band, and actually, most of their time they spent swatting flies. However, Homer came away with a very definite conviction about the feeling that the Spanish War left him that was reflected in one of the teachings of William Edward Biederwolf, who was also a colonel in the American Army in the Spanish-American War. Biederwolf wrote, "You know I am opposed to war. I think it barbarous and unchristian way of attempting to settle disputes. I deprecate very much the feeling of hatred towards Spain. I believe before God that America has been chosen to administer to that half-civilized and brutal nation a fearful but well-deserved punishment. But you may talk about patriotism if you will. When the heart is filled with tiger feelings of hatred and anger, the heart is not in the sight of God. We must fight this battle on a higher principle than revenge." Rodehaver was very attracted to Biederwolf, who was a very dynamic and interesting man. And even though he was actively attending and studying music at Ohio Wesleyan University, in 1904, Rodehaver dropped out of school to join Biederwolf in his crusade. Biederwolf's crusade was one of 57 different crusades managed by this man, John Wilbur Chapman, who was the true founder of what we call fundamentalism. And one of the other evangelists that John Wilbur Chapman had on his docket was a fellow named Reverend Billy Sunday, who was an intense and dynamic force in evangelism, probably the most important evangelist of the early 20th century. In 1910, Billy Sunday heard Homer sing with either one of the Chapman or Biederwolf campaigns and made him an offer he couldn't refuse to join the Sunday campaign. He was a really intense and dynamic character, as I said, and hopefully, we will get through this next audio selection without comment, but we'll see.
Someone said to me the other day, oh, prohibition interferes with my personal liberty. Certainly, every law in the statute book interferes with the liberty of the cook that wants to break it. It don't interfere with my liberty because I keep it. The shepherd tears the teeth of the wolf away from the throat of the sheep for which the sheep is thankful. And then the wolf complains against the shepherd for interfering with his personal liberty. Someone said to me, oh, prohibition makes bootleggers and rum runners. Moonshiners. Oh, we had bootleggers and moonshiners when we were under the British flag. For 155 years, the stars and stripes have waved over America. We've had bootleggers and we have them now. Like a fellow wrote to a doctor and said, dear doctor, I had a wart on my face and a pound and a half. I'm taking 12 bottles of your medicine. My face is gone, but the wart is there yet. Oh, the saloons are gone, the brewers are gone, the distillers are gone, but the bootlegger and the moonshiner, my friend, he's here yet, you say. I said to me, well, they don't keep it, we'll repeal it. All right, then repeal the 18th of the Ten Commandments. They don't keep the Ten Commandments. They lie, they steal, they commit adultery, they murder, and yet you know without the Ten Commandments there'd be no civilization. You know that society and civilization rest on morals. Morals rest on religion. Religion rests on faith in God and in Jesus Christ.
A Billy Sunday crusade. I mean, when he was speaking, he was constantly pacing in a circle, jumping down. He was very dynamic and vibrant. His that recording is one of two that survives that deal with his old age, but and is not a very good representation. But his voice was booming and very loud, and people were very, very impressed by Reverend Sunday. He even said things to shock people deliberately, you know. And the newspapers, a lot of them, excoriated Sunday all the time. But actually, some of his best friends were newspaper men. Now, this, I hope, works. Next selection, please. The tabernacle in each town for the on a Sunday campaign was specially constructed for that campaign. Whether it was 4, 5, 6 weeks in a town, they could put one of these tabernacles up in 4 days, tear it down in one. The lumber was then sold off to the community where the crusade was handled, and then they would use it to build houses or hospitals or schools in the area where the crusade had been held. The road leading to the tabernacle often ended up being the access road to a new subdivision in this area. So the Sunday Crusades really did a lot for the local economies in the various places where they were held, which usually averaged between 12 to 15 different cities in a year. And it was just an incredible undertaking. And Ma Sunday, Billy's wife, was actually the organizational mind behind the thing. And this wheel, which isn't easy to read, is just intended to illustrate how many different aspects of organization went into a Sunday crusade. It was a very intense thing. Billy Sunday first gained fame as a baseball player in the 1880s for the Chicago White Sox. And they took Homer right into their organization, and in fact, Homer relocated to the town where they lived, which was Winona Lake, Indiana. And he was basically third in the chain of command in these massive Sunday campaigns. So you get an idea of what he was really involved in, and this was his main thing, not making records. One person that he discovered in working with Reverend Sunday was Mrs. Asher, who you see on the right records, but her name was Virginia Asher, and she was the founder of a women's Bible study group, which only recently disbanded because their members got to be so few and so old they couldn't make it to Winona Lake during the summer anymore. Homer Rhoda Haver said that when he first met Mrs. Asher, she was singing on her own, and she had a low contralto voice, and she was not very successful. But when she sang with Homer, that people really liked it. And together they made more than 100 records. But Virginia Asher only made one record on her own. Next segment, please. This is an example of what they sound like together. Came from a Rainbow record that was made in Cincinnati in 1921. Billy and Homer were really tight, and they did not see eye to eye on necessarily everything. When Homer resigned from the Sunday campaign in 1927, I read the 11-paged, single-spaced letter of basically complaints about Sunday that Homer wrote to Ma, and she was so upset about it that she didn't show it to Billy for 2 years. But nonetheless, in the final analysis in his book, which I don't know if I can grab quickly. Yeah, it's not in here. But book 20 Years with Billy Sunday, Homer said that in the main, more people were brought to Christ by Reverend Sunday than anyone else that he ever knew, and perhaps that even God ever knew. Also, it was probably Ma who was behind bankrolling getting Rhoda Haver into the publishing business, which turned out to be very, very lucrative for him, and the copyrights made him a rich man in his old age. Naturally, as a publisher, he wanted to be able to exploit his copyrights by making records. And Homer made more than 550 records for Victor, Columbia, Edison, Emerson, Brunswick, Aeolian, Vocalion, Bridgeport, Tool & Die, Jeanette, Rainbow, and just about every label in his period except for the dime store labels, Pathé. He never made records for them, but everyone else. And I think what we're supposed to do here is talk about one of the extraordinary records that he made for Victor in June 1917 during the Sunday campaign in New York City, which was, as you can see in this still, was an impressive campaign. On an average day, some 17,000 people would come through this campaign. And most of these folks were people who were getting on board to go overseas to fight in the war. And a lot of them, of course, didn't come back. This was their opportunity to get right with God. Somehow, Homer convinced the Victor Company to bring an acoustic recording setup out to the New York Tabernacle and make the following recording.
Bye.
That's not a fade. Mike, you called it right. What are the, it sounds like a fade, but someone, probably Homer, managed to get the audience to stop clapping at once, so the recording ends with a with silence. It's the
rainbow
earliest, I don't know that this is absolutely true, but as far as I can tell, it's the earliest on-location recording of any kind made by the American Victor Company. The British HMV made some records of marching as early as 1906 that were done outdoors. But yeah, this is the earliest I know of an American company releasing what is essentially a live recording. Billy Sunday had plenty of detractors, one of which was the artist George Bellows, and who created this interesting paint, this work, and this painting, The Sawdust Trail, which shows Homer up here at the right, and the crusade in the background, and then these revelers at the bottom of the painting. And
very hard to see. Can they turn the lights on?
Yeah. Thank you. George Bellows once commented that Billy Sunday makes me glad to be an anarchist. So it gives you an idea of what the more liberal forces or left-wing forces in America in the 1920s felt about the Sunday campaign and crusades. They really hated it. Okay. Going back to Homer's recording, Homer recorded several different types of records. Not necessarily everything he did was sacred. The Archaeophone Company, as fine as they are, have a slightly misleading comment on their website about Homer Rodehaver recording many temperance songs. Actually, he only recorded five that I know of, the most famous of which, I guess, is De Brouwer's Biggs Hosses, which he recorded in 1913, and it was his first issued record for Victor, and in 1948 for the second incarnation of Rainbow. I've kind of tagged the two together.
Rainbow records are more on a mix.
We missed a track.
Maybe. Ever since I made...
Oh, no. Just go ahead and move ahead.
Rainbow records are more of a mission than a business. Ever since I made the first recordings of gospel songs several years ago, messages have been coming from all over the world thanking me because of spiritual blessings and inspiration brought by the records. With these messages came many requests for favorite songs. Because none of the big companies would record them, we started to make Rainbow records.
Okay, next. I seem to be missing one. In 1920, Homer founded Rainbow Records. Sometime in June of 1920, and had a record made ready to go by the Winona Lake meeting of that August. And it was the only record in the catalog for a while, this one. Safe in the Arms of Jesus, with Homer playing trombone and his sister, Ruth Rodehaver, singing. Flip side is I Walk with the King. Go ahead and play that segment. This is the band that's accompanying him, the Smith String Holmes Orchestral Quintet. They played on most of the Rainbow
Records. I sang this song for a great crowd of colored folks one night. And as I finished it, one of the good old-fashioned aunties got up in the back row, taking off her old sunbonnet, waving it in the air, stepping high down the aisle. She said, "Hallelujah! I walked with him too, brother." And then there came the chorus from all over the house. "Yeah, we all walked with him down here." That's the real purpose of the song, friends, to get folks to walk with him. This is the verse that seems to stir her enthusiasm. Oh, so near despair.
Hey, you can see this is an odd assortment of instruments. And this is what these guys specialized in. They were a Chautauqua group. Homer couldn't afford to pay like an equivalent of the Victor Orchestra to play on his Rainbow Records. However, these guys were fine because they could match up instruments to make a bigger sound, and they actually provided most of the orchestral accompaniments. What I had was a slide of the front of a Rainbow Records catalog. Oh, and I should show you. This is Lotus Flower Spring. Mrs. Spring named all her children after flowers. There's a lot of confusion, as you know, about Rainbow Records as to number, what does this number mean? Well, after surveying all of his printed catalogs from the early 20s, I have the answer. For some reason, the first 27 records in the catalog appeared in 1920, like in mid-1921. However, by 1923, all of those had been replaced by completely different titles. The one exception was 1001, which stayed standard, and Homer listed it as his bestseller, Safe in the Arms of Jesus, backed with I Walk with the King. But those two selections were issued in multiple recordings, so he was replacing those as well. Eventually, the first 27 numbers did become somewhat standardized, and Homer did allow himself to simply delete numbers that were no longer in stock. But for some reason, he was returning to them again and again to add new titles, which, of course, is a terrible thing for a discographer. There's a 300 number master. The main master series runs from 1001 to 1130 in 1926. There are also some smaller series, a 300 number thing that runs to about six records, a 501 that runs to about three records, and then an 8000 number that is applied to the lone 12-inch record that Rainbow Records released. So on 141 numbered records, something like a little over 400 masters were issued. And there's some other vagary of his operation that I can't recall now. When he begins to, he actually used his own cutter and recording equipment. And I can verify that because he demonstrated a recording, kind of a demo, how to make records at the Shillitoe's department store in Cincinnati in May of 1921. And he used his own gear to do that. He also recorded people at crusades, specifically the Winona Lake Bible Meeting in 1920 and the Cincinnati Crusade in May 1921. Among the historical figures that Homer put on record for posterity, this fellow, Russell Conwell, was born in the 1850s and he died in 1925. His sermon, Acres of Diamonds, he delivered more than 5,000 times, which is a world's record for the most times a single speech has been given by a person. And we have a recording of it because Homer made one in 1921. In addition to that, he recorded a singer named Dan Beddo, another fellow born in the 1850s, who was not only a great sacred singer, but an opera singer as well, and someone who was the head of the music department at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. Beddo made several records for Rainbow, and I haven't been able to get one because the vocal collectors have figured that out, and the eBay prices are getting ridiculous. I can't afford one. He recorded a trio that was associated with the Mel Trotter Mission in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which was a major mission devoted to recovering alcoholics. He also recorded Bob Jones Sr., the founder of Bob Jones University in the early 1920s, a fellow named Reverend Charles Stewart, who delivers a sermon on how to get an audience without resorting to claptrap methods. It's not as interesting as it sounds. And he also recorded Beaterwoof, which is, I mean, these are guys that were dead by 1940, and they never made other records. And the reason that the picture of Charles H. Gabriel is in this context is because he recorded accompanying this fellow, EOXL, in the only records that Gabriel ever made. This XL was 70 when he made this record in May of 1921. He died in June of 1921. He was the head of the Hope Publishing Company and was a singing leader who had worked with the original Moody and Sankey campaign. Oh, there's the Brewers' Big Hosses. Well, we'll play them.
Horses coming down the road, toting around old Lucifer's load. They step so high and they step so free, but them big horses can't run over me. Oh no, boys, oh no, the turnpike free wherever I go. I'm a decorate and in your city, and the bluest big horses can't run over me. Oh no, boys, oh no, the turnpike free wherever I go.
I'm a temperance engine,
and don't you see, and the bluest big horses can't run over me.
Oh, the liquor men been acting like they own this place, living on the sweat of the poor man's face. They's as fat and as sassy as they can be, but them big horses can't run over me. Oh no, boys, oh no, the turnpike's free wherever I go. I'm a temperance engine, don't you see, and the brewer's big horses can't run over me. Oh no, boys, oh no, the turnpike's free wherever I go. I'm a temperance engine, don't you see, and the brewer's big horses can't run over me.
Go ahead and move it to the next track. This is XL.
Happiness humbly. If you need to empower the reward,
Well, the Brewers' big hosses may not be able to run over Homer, but time is running over me. So I will quickly just summarize in a second. These are the different types of rainbow labels. This was printed by Jeanette. In 1925, Homer gave up on manufacturing his own records and gave the whole business over to Jeanette for the last year. This is an example of something special that he did on his own label, and I don't know how many of those there were. And to summarize, Homer recorded black gospel groups for Rainbow in the 20s and even sang with them, the Wiseman Sextet specifically. After he left Sunday, he continued to publish hymnals and books. He did a study in 1951 on the relationship of African rhythm to American black gospel called Singing Black. That is way ahead of its time. And he started another label in the same vein as the first label, No Boundaries, attempting to represent gospel music exactly as it was with everyone who was important in it during his time. And I think that it's pretty easy to see that we owe the idea of recording gospel music, which is a massive and mostly undocumented legacy, to Homer Rodehaver. Thank you very much.
Next up,
hello.
Hello.
Next up, we have, and I'll probably pronounce